No.
You just said in your letter you had no more bad
things. I hate
to say it because no one's going to believe it when I said I'm a security guard. Okay, now you come on.
I'm the law.
You're the law.
Welcome to the law.
Since Barry is. Yeah. And all I deal with is drunks. So it's great. I mean, it's like, I have experience in this area. I'm
good.
Yeah, that's good.
So you can just let
the
strength and all
this down. They try to bribe me all the time. What's it worth to you for us to criticize? It's not my job. I got to be the hard ass. You know? I'm very nice about it. As much like,
what do you do? You like shut them up?
No. I shut them off, or at least get them out of an area where they're keeping guests away.
Oh, okay.
They're trying to witch hunt them. They have their own beer. They can take out the lobby and drink it alone.
Oh, okay. Well,
what? Uniform? Yeah, but this is part of it, actually. I got to wear this as a jacket I wear.
Will you enjoy your spit play?
Yeah. You guys have to point at this.
John's the man.
Okay, I'm done messing around. Alright? I'm gonna call him Darkseid. I have to do that.
Well, who's the beer in
it? Darkseid's the man.
Party. I found that out. I consulted Mary the barmaid. All she right. said it's their Christmas New Year's Eve party. Okay, so
in the X-Files, you have this guy whose sister was apparently abducted by aliens as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And because of this, he's a very intelligent, very well-off guy. He grows up. He's able to get very educated, and he's very driven. And he goes to the FBI. And he investigates all the weird paranormal cases no one else wants to touch. And they lump these under a certain division they call the X-Files, the unexplainable stuff. He investigates that stuff, but he's become a little bit of thorn in the side of the federal government. And now I say it's time to discredit this guy and possibly even get him out of the FBI.
So I do it, and I just don't do it so stylistic.
Assign him this very rational,
instinctively,
very clinical,
the genes of my ancestors.
Woman.
That's the color.
Scully,
this is the tension,
to basically come in
there.
She has
a nice body.
Yeah, and she's supposed to come in there and like show him up.
I've seen pictures of her.
She's cute. She's cute.
She's
a good actress, and she's
cute. By the way,
what?
Well, you'll never see her in the X-Files show. She's out there on the internet.
Oh, I
And
it's an advertisement for, you know.
FHM magazine, that's all I'll say. Some sort of British men's magazine. And she posed for him, so that's... Anyway. So,
how
anyway.
Is she before you continue?
She's great. If I was not married, I'd be, Anyway. So she's assigned to him, and she's supposed to discredit him and show him up as, you know, this buffoon, this guy who's totally unorthodox and doesn't know what the hell he's doing. The problem is they call him Spooky Mulder. His last name is Mulder. Because even though he's unorthodox and he's interested in paranormal stuff and all the weird cases, he usually solves them. Not by any way that anyone else had ever gone about doing it, but it does get solved. And so they're like, they can't totally write him off. So she comes in, that's how the show starts.
I didn't know all that premise.
That's the premise.
I didn't know that, like, it was antagonistic.
And when she comes in, he's like, oh yeah, you're the one here is supposed to hear, keep a good eye on me and report back and everything. And she says, no. Even though she kind of knows that is what she's supposed to be doing, yeah. She's not really interested in the whole agenda.
Oh, cool.
So she's fresh out of the academy.
Fresh. Go on.
So they've had some experiences, they've gone to investigate some cases, etc. And she's more and more becoming a little bit more accepting of some of the things that he's talking about.
When is this on?
Sunday nights right now.
Yeah, it used to be on Fridays, now it's on Sundays at 9.
Sundays at 9. Okay, then.
Fox.
Yes, 61.
Fox rules.
Fox does rules.
Fox is better than any of those other fuckers.
I agree.
They are. They're just badass.
No, I have to agree.
They are badass.
They are.
They're owned by a slime bag.
Why? Well, just do a who's on. Just do a who's on.
It's all in there.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Another time.
All right.
Another time.
We'll do it a cappella.
If I was bad, then no problem.
You're up here. There's nobody here. Dude, there's nobody here.
Those two people over there resent being called nobody, you know.
I'll tell you this.
Well, no, I don't mean that. I apologize.
Once, right. You're forgetting this once, but it was not even an attempt to compete.
Oh, you haven't drunk enough beer. Scully's pursuing the rest of the investigation. Landing at Oakland International, Dana Scully soon found herself in a taxi passing by the Alameda Nimitz Naval Air Station, then facing backed up traffic at the toll for the Bay Bridge. In spite of the traffic, she smiled. With some sense she could not name, perhaps a combination of cues brought to her by sight, smell, even sound, she felt the nearness of the Pacific, rather than simply knowing it was on the other side of the Golden Gate and Skyline Boulevard. For Scully, the time seemed to pass quickly. Before she knew it, she was across the bay, the taxi turning off Market Street and stopping at the address she'd given the driver. She paid her fare and then, after taking the sign out front, stepped through the automatic doors of Neutrino Comics Incorporated. The walls were black and inscribed with white loops, curves, lines, and spirals, but most of their surface was dominated by the impressive display of choice comic art. There were display cases and wire racks stuffed full with a wide variety of comics, as well as toys, models, and action figures. Bookshelves supported many rows of paperbacks. From the ceiling hung an eclectic mix of fanciful spacecraft models, painted metal figurines of knights and sorcerers, action figure superheroes, and odd miscellany that included a globe of a world that didn't exist. In the room's center were tables, chairs, a coffee bar, and food counter. A U-shaped counter flanked the sides of the room and sealed off the rear from the offices beyond. The place was big and full of people. Scully went straight to the back of the room. A deeply tanned woman with frizzy black hair and a diamond set in her nose tended the register in the middle of the rear counter. She smiled at Scully. My name is Rita. I can help you. What are you looking for? I'm looking for Eric Armandroff. He's expecting me. I'm Dana Scully. I'm with the FBI. Rita unhooked the cordless phone she wore at her hip and spoke quietly into it. When she was done, she returned the phone to her hip, unlocked the gate in the counter, and let Scully through. Please wait there by the door and security will admit you. This is before my security job. This had nothing to do with security. Behind the counter, a long wall of thick glass, interrupted in three places by glass doors, stood as the final barrier between the store and the offices. A guard in a black uniform on the other side of the wall came forward and unlocked the center door. Scully was led by the guard through a labyrinth of desks, chairs, tables, and haphazardly shaped partitions, seemingly placed at random. The walls were of a soft peach color, decorated in moderation with paintings, masks, totems, and other objects of art. The effect was soothing and conveyed an atmosphere open and informal. Scully found it a relief after the clutter and bustle of the store. The guard brought Scully to a semi-enclosed area containing two desks, an intervening table, and some chairs, then left her without a word. One desk was unoccupied. Behind the other sat a tall, slender man with long, dark blonde hair bound in a ponytail. He stood up and reached across the desk, shaking Scully's hand. Hi, Agent Scully, I'm Eric. Why don't you take a load off? comfortable? Escalates Hope? Host? Need anything? No, I'm fine, thank you. Okay, so how can I help out my friends at the FBI? Mr. Armendroff, during the course of a crash investigation, we've uncovered a peculiar link to your comic from the Illuminati. Cool! Mildly irked by Armendroff's flippancy, Scully frowned a little and continued. The linkage is at best tenuous, but right now every possible lead is being examined, so I'm going to need to ask you some questions on how this comic gets written. Also cool, Eric completed, smiling broadly. To start with, Scully went on, is there some sort of a set storyline which the comics are all plotted? Some Bible I might be able to look at to show me? No, Eric Armendroff interrupted with a brief snort. There isn't. Then, is there a way I can get in touch with any of the comics' writers? No way that I know of. Not any of them? Why not? Because, explained Eric, apparently much amused, there is no them. The comic has only one writer. He uses one pen name when writing a certain type of script, another for a different type. He writes under 9 different pseudonyms. That's supposed to be a top neutrino secret, but I doubt the readers would take it at face value anyway. And, Scully said, unbelieving, you have no way of getting in touch with him? Armendroff held up his hands and shrugged. We're neutrino comics. A lot of our staff is never here. They send in stuff by internet and fax and save themselves a lot of antacids and gasoline. And you have no other contact with the writer at all? How does he get paid? You have to understand, the dude is super paranoid, just like the comic. He believes the stuff he puts into it. That's a lot of its appeal. The full title is The Absolutely True Tales of the Illuminati. So we never see him. His royalties are direct deposited to his bank, and there are only 2 names on the account, his and that of his fan club president. Scully reflected a moment. Perhaps I can have his next call traced over the internet.
Hey, you should have him be murdered by his fan club president.
Boy, send me out with the trash.
Yeah!
Oh my god!
Not a good idea, man!
Yeah! He did it to me
again!
I wasn't
gonna come. But she sent me out with the trash, and I said, I couldn't resist that opportunity. I got sent out to do the trash, man.
You're a fucking comedy show. Merry Christmas. You have a car?
Glad you made it up.
Yes.
All right. Nice. Glad you made it up. Someone said, it was a trash.
How was it going to come?
I'm glad you made it.
How was it going to
come? Do you still have one extra copy?
How can I resist that? I got sent out to do the trash.
Oh, yeah.
Sit down.
The trash is right
sit
out
down.
There.
Sit down and start to leave
no,
in 2 minutes.
I have to go back before she knows I'm gone.
Lind, L-I-N-D-E.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
That's the name of the scientist. Yeah, it is serious. He's extremely serious. He uses very advanced math and physics to explain it. I actually didn't understand it when I read it.
Oh, that's very important.
Scalar fields. It shows how energy potentials at the origin of the universe set certain constants, physical constraints of the universe.
Yeah, and there's always that theme, that question of why were those constants set at this level?
Right, exactly.
Which
he says
life
that
possible.
Apparently they're off by like a millionth. Life cannot exist in the universe. It's like it's so fine-tuned. He said, actually, Wheeler, who helped develop the Everett Wheeler hypothesis of multiple universes, the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, says, the only way to explain it is to say there's an infinity of universes, and that of those, some of them are going to be fine-tuned enough just by randomness to have life, and we happen to be in that one. And maybe there are others, but it's not that the universe was set to create us, it's that out of infinity there's going to be a universe here and there. It's going to be set perfectly to develop life, and we're in it. If you weren't, we couldn't be here. There you are. Anthropic principle.
Why are we here? We're here because we're here.
It is somewhat circular, but what he says is the only way for us to be here observing the universe is for the universe to have been set for us to be here. And that means that either someone consciously went and fine-tuned the universe to an incredible degree, which a lot of people who are very religious would accept and have no problem with, but the rest of us who are looking for physics for an answer are like, well, doesn't quantum mechanics already talk about multiple realities coexisting?
Actually, the idea of God, as we understand it, would suggest that God never leaves traces, in a sense, so that it would always be alternate explanations possible, and also the richness of such
things
would suggest that there would be this whole range of
meet the madness.
There's also another thing which a lot of religious people supporting the steady state view of the universe is of continuous creation is that God does not stop creating.
quantum mechanics is perfectly in line with that. It goes back to
the Neoplatonic philosophy, which is getting back a lot of monotheism as we know it today.
No, he's not separate. He's definitely entwined with his creation, or it could not be the way it is. The observer affects the observed. Anyway. That's the basis of quantum mechanics. You cannot even look at something without affecting the experiment. You're measuring the experiment, you affect the experiment. You affect the results. Just by observing something, you're affecting it. So God cannot have a universe he's created without having some effect upon it, just by having made it.
Monte's talking about it.
Anyway.
They're drinking a coche back there until they ran out of it.
Oh, really?
It's a Polish beer. It's very strong.
What is it? I want to try it.
Coche. They ran out. He's very mad. He said, no more Coche. He's going to drink Beck's. I told him Germans invaded Poland 3 times.
There you go.
He told me that. He's got a degree in that stuff.
So it's all consistent.
No. Right. Coche is Polish.
Cunt? Really? No, it's a town. It's a town in Poland, he told me. Adam, name day. Happy name day to Adam.
Happy name day.
Happy name day, Adam.
Name day. Yeah.
Yeah,
that
was actually an ashtray.
Oops.
Let me finish this because I should be already on the road right now.
Okay.
All right.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, Scully says 15 billion years ago, and he says that's about where it starts. With our universe growing out of another. Astronomers for years have cataloged objects older than the observed age of the universe. And Valley, that's the name of the royalty checks, Bow Valley, implies that among the things not yet cataloged is life from the other universe. So it's about aliens, UFOs? Armadroff uttered a choked chuckle. Yeah, definitely. Valley emphasizes again and again that life existed on Earth from the very moment it was habitable. This implies one of two things. Life was delivered here either as bacteria in a comet or by aliens playing Johnny Appleseed, or life arises very readily under the right conditions. But Valley says there's also a third option, all of the above. I think that's what he believes. Comets or aliens and also native life? No. Comets and aliens and native life. The whole enchilada. What he leaves up in the air is a sequence. Comets first, then aliens, then native life, comets, aliens, whatever. He leaves the origin of the aliens open too. Another universe, another time, another star, someplace closer. The hints sometimes point to more than one group of ETs. Some aliens from somewhere came here though and pitched their tents in isolated parts of the world. The Atlantis myth is about an alien base. Scully was smiling a little. Mulder would love this.
Yeah, you would.
What's Mulder? A special branch of the government? You could say that. Can you get to the part? Can you get to the part where the Illuminati come in? That's the information I'm primarily interested in. I've just told you, the Atlanteans. Valley says they've been interfering in evolution, and when civilization started, they kicked off a plan to move the world toward a global culture with one government, concentrating power in the hands of a few, with an entire world civilization to exploit. And that's the basic, most basic outline I could possibly give you. Scully blinked. There's more? Majorly more. Scully stood. I think I've heard enough. Can you tell me how to reach the fan club president? No problem, Armadroff responded, sitting forward. I can tell you how, but I can't guarantee it'll work. You have to tell me what you're laughing about, because I'm very self-conscious right now.
I think something about Baha'is and one world government.
Yeah.
Am I guess right? Yeah. The Baha'is are Illuminati.
Yeah.
That figures.
All right.
One what?
As long as it's not as complicated as the Illuminati series. It's pretty complicated. Got something to write on? Scully resignedly took out a pen and pad and sat back down. All right, that's where I'll stop.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking right. But in any event, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is the last time this happened where he showed up and there's like this, you know, I kind of freaked out and bummed out. But tonight I'm not going to do that. It's like, no. We're going to have our meeting.
Fine.
We'll take it wherever it has to go. Jim will get to play his guitar. Everybody who wants to read something will read. And, you know, we'll go where we have to go. You know, there's a certain immortality present. Mark Bergeron showed up with his bag of trash.
That was amazing.
the fact that Mark Bergeron showed up with his bag of trash and John showed up with his X-Files script, you know, what can you say in the face of it? What do you say in the face of mystery?
These meetings have gone from bizarre to...
Mark Bergeron was a stalwart member until last December, then he quit. Didn't show up for a long time. There was all sorts of bitterness and acrimony. Then he started showing up again. But it's like he's quit, but he's still showing up. So like, he sneaks out of his house because his wife doesn't like this anymore, even though she was once a stalwart member too. She's a nice lady, but she's kind of insane. And she illustrated like 9 of those.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the point I'm trying to say is like he's quit, but he shows up, you know. And then John shows up and he's got a job as a guard. And we all have our individually screwed up singular lives. But it goes on. So what can you say? You either get mad, or you just like say it's a mystery, we'll dance with it. You like, this is what you do. You go, mystery, will you dance with me? And if you're lucky, mystery dances with you. That's about all you can say, right, Jim?
Yep. Mystery.
Okay. So the question is, do we want to hear the... I have a longer thing to read. So the thing is, do we want to read here, or do we want to read Jerry's house? Which is... If you're distracted by various...
No, well, I notice things, but I'm not that distracted. It's pretty easy to hear and everything right here, and we're here, and I don't have that much time because...
Okay.
I'm set a little bit of corner. I like this. I like this corner.
Okay, so we'll just carry on here.
And because it's not crowded, it's, you know...
It's true, the crowd isn't there. Ordinarily, the crowd would be up here.
It's not crowded, it's not loud, it's just, you know, very relaxed here.
Okay. So we're going to go with being here for a while.
Yeah.
So there's going to have to be a... Perhaps after David has to leave, there's going to have to be a section at Jerry's house. Cause that man is going to play guitar before he departs.
Of course. I don't know how to make it at Jerry's house. It's kind of truth.
What? It's like 10.
Yeah, it is. This time, though. Depending on what time we'll be here.
Well, we're not going to leave that long. We're only 15, 20 minutes.
We'll see what happens. All right. I'm going to play my ears.
Okay. Well, let's just carry on.
Let's move on. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good thing.
Pause just stop.
Okay, Mark, here you go.
Okay. I want to explain how this came about. Recently, when I have things that happen to me in bunches, I kind of take notice of them, especially when they come fairly close to one another, and I kind of, you know, perk up the ears of my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up visiting Ray, and he... What exactly was it you called it? What was it exactly you had to write?
In applying for MFA creative writing programs, all of them require that you give to them a statement of intent in which you denote your past accomplishments, your present aspirations, and your future hopes. So I sat down and I wrote my statement of purpose. And that's, because I felt it was a good statement of purpose, or rather it just summed up what I had to say, I read it to Mark.
Yeah. And then a few days later, I returned from Boston and I saw a movie called Jerry Maguire.
And oh yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and in the middle of this, at the beginning of this movie, he gets up in the middle of the night after having his conscience roused.
By the baby?
No. Oh. No, not by her. And he writes a mission statement for his company that's based far more on principle.
Fewer clients, less money.
Yeah, fewer clients, less money, right, yeah. And more personal attention. That's another... But it was a result of a rousing of his conscience, and you know, I was thinking, you know, within close proximity of one another, I had heard about these statements of purpose, and I decided that I wanted to write something along that line for myself. I kind of throwing out the idea of the traditional New Year's resolution type deal,
But, you know, going towards some general principles, which I want to incorporate in the coming calendar year. And I divided it up into several sections, one of which I'm going to read now, which is called Arc. If spirit is the cause, then art is the result. Art for me is not all, but an expression of the all working through me. It is the only worthy expression of the sacred undifferentiated essence which indwells my own spirit. Out of other gospels comes my own testament, molded with my own fire, combined with what I alone see. The primary art of my existence is poetry, but it is not an art to which I have fully committed the necessary hard work. It is my mission to change this. And it is necessary for my voice to be heard, not for my glorification, and not because it is my voice, but because of that divine demon which stalks my soul and whispers in my ear, demands that I be its voice. And that's my statement on art.
Worthy statement, dog charrette.
Yeah, fucking rock the house, man. Yeah. Yes.
Now, Dave.
Dave, well, introducing. Live from Bob, Dave.
Well, I just wanted to share a little poem.
You will never get any more loving inheritance and enthusiasm than at the joke. Literature is worshipped. An alcohol is drunk. You're on.
Always be drunk, whether by poetry or virtue,
yes,
or wine. Anyway, yes. That's Baudelaire said something,
yes,
close to
Baudelaire.
That.
Baudelaire.
He said something,
man.
Very
Baudelaire.
Close to that. Yes.
In, Baudelaire.
Yes.
Baudelaire is moved to tears
drunk
by the
some
smallest
way.
Flower.
Yes.
Especially if it was evil.
The fact for Patti Smith.
Yeah!
50 feet of solemn neon, red and four square. This song, being a perfectionist, I'll start over again. The fact for Patti Smith. 50 feet of solemn neon, red and four square. This sign commands Route 1. Trenton makes the world
takes. Yeah!
We push north through the night, past Manhattan toward home, carrying Trenton's grief. If Isfahan is half the world, New Jersey is the other half. It was a necessary thing, a very good thing, but okay. I'm not sure that the marginalization of religions was a bad thing. And of course it was both a bad thing and a good thing. It was a necessary thing, a very good thing, but with tragic consequences also, because the murderous reaction of the 20th century was not accidental but inevitable. The idea that scientific progress and the abandonment of superstition would bring peace and harmony and justice is called positivism, and should be finished by now. He says, I think that the internet is the greatest unifying force in the world right now. Yes, now anyone, yes I say, now anyone with a computer can see pictures of 14-year-olds fucking or learn how to make
a
pipe bomb.
All right. I want to see the pictures.
And then he's really, you know.
Is this him or you at this point?
Okay, well then he replies, that was me.
Okay.
We know, as artists around the world have been forced to admit, that art will not by itself restore civilization to coherence any more than business will, or the military, or any political movement, or any of the various fundamentalist movements in the world. We know that wherever people strive, they reflect, however dimly, a glimmer of the light from that fire which blazeth and rageth in the world of creation. That's me. This is the... we know that we labor to announce Baha'u'llah's glad tidings, not necessarily in every little piece of art we write, but that it's in there. This is the heart of the matter. He says, I think the glad tidings are tided, and of them we have received the tidings only a minuscule portion attributed Only very few attribute the news to Baha'u'llah. This is true. Most simply get it from the popular media. In a funny way, it's true. It really isn't startling news anymore. World is unified, one planet, one world, one family. Red Grammar song is a commonplace, if not a cliche, and the most insincere earnest hustler can use the phrase and gain agreement. That's certainly true. I reply, I say, yes, I love the way advertising promotes world unity in the interest of capitalism, and I really do not think it is the purpose of art, or even of the Baha'i faith, for that matter, to promote banalities. I think there are new questions to be framed and addressed. About this last paragraph, in my presentation, I emphasize that this does not mean that Baha'is have what it takes to make great art, but we have a meaning framework that may, if we can begin to use it, allow us to find more ways to connect the meaning structures around us, everything from paintings and rock albums to advertisements and souvenirs, to a vision of the sacred and to an idea of sacred history that includes the present. It's revisioning that counts. Maybe, he says, but I don't think a doctrine is the means. The means is a capacity to see with the inner heart, and this is beyond doctrine, he says. And I reply, of course. In fact, that's what I said. I hope that clarifies things a bit, or at least complicates them. There's not just two sides here. I will also send you another email forwarding a piece I sent to a friend in Chicago, and it's a proposal we sent up on email, a Baha'i Arts Journal, to get deeper into this subject. So, you know, that's
good.
All right, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like your manifesto. Yeah, good fucking right.
Let's take a piss.
In honor of that.
I am touched. I need to do that too.
This is called the Ruby Virgin Subversives, and I'm not going to say a single thing about it in prelude. One, I imagined her naked. It starts this way. Her nightgown was a light wind. I walked it over her head. I'm still imagining her naked. This doesn't end. This universe doesn't include you. It's fit for two naked bodies, is all. Two. This universe fires with life, derived from her cheek and breast, her voice, its sweet darkling wind, her wondering eyes as I enter her deeper. This universe, two bodies, boundless, odd measuring of space and time, each flaming touch is a star, each spasm marking empires risen and fallen. Three. It's about the sky sprayed with carnal lights. It's about the thousand oceans in her hair. It's about hard pulse pursuing soft prayer. It's about ruby silken loops, thrilling lit. Throbbing becomes wanting song, and twining a movement out. Femme lips open for sad cosmic gain, nothing sated, hunger trembling still. Four. Her hands, curled, cup, and salve, lather despairing skin with sleep. Perform erotic acts vaguely sacred, offer discouraged blood, bright sermons. These hands will dull your scars, you need before you believe. Your belief runs fast, smoking. These hands are new, you've snared them. Five. Blue eyes fled after burden's dawn. Retreat was panicked and futile. Blue eyes returned with fall of new language, discovered the tangle contained divine fury. Covered in violent words now, blue eyes opened, wider, more light. Covered in hungry words now, blue eyes closed, felt something new. Six. Her voice, a sweet darkling wind, remembers the intense blank time. Sings when unheeded of a mystic shore, when still a creature at a ragged gallop. Presses the gospel of staccato breaths and several hopes of rest and sweetness. Sometimes becomes a carnal wind, an exhale of wet, puffy icons. Seven. Her breast thrashes, relents, and laughs. Laughs, proselytizes, and laughs. Becomes minister to fiery want. Declaims convention black enemy. We'll give more. We'll learn how. We'll thrash and laugh for the wet life. will conquer pink sheet tendencies, will bloom as rain and darkness comes. 8. Her nightgown, and I was furious, a shell of cream and pink frosting, a lie, a worthless toy, static, god of denial, god of inhibition. The heresy in your world is to want nakedly. The sin in your world is wild blood. The crime in your world enjoyed. I urged the gown over her head. 9. When her thighs approached me for truth, I shifted and begged their command. Give us your truth, no less. Enlightened slave, I recall and comply. Recall an earlier moment, ruby fright. A dubious young universe, dry, disbelieving. A nightgown of shells, ruby virgin. Cut away fresh from your stiff garden. 10. And the first hour of the first day came and passed and was good. Ruins of joy and pain bespoke coming patina. The second hour calmer, less taken with taking. The third hour was the first crushing moment of the first crushing mate. The fourth doled out packets of powers. These powers toward skin, limbs, hair. The first day ended with vaginal pageantry. 11. New universe of segueing flesh, governed from strong want, busted out. Each day disfigures me more happily. Sing to me, a mirthful canker, sing. The ruby virgin is mine henceforth, twisting into knots my weaknesses and dreams, allowing my red madness when it comes, applying wet skin to my rotten seams. Hi, Jim.
Great.
Yeah.
All I can say about that poem is that in a number of passages that I have heard, Miss Emily has taught you well.
Oh, thank you.
Are you Irish?
All right.
Well, jig, Irish. Can't do the jig?
Anybody.
I have cousins who can do the jig.
You can cousin me,
Mary. Can I have another poker case?
Yeah, don't waste the glass.
What's the jig is like this, like...
Don't move your arms.
Right?
No, don't move your arms.
Like that, right? Like something with the feet?
Yeah. Up, yeah, bring them...
Yeah, like you have one foot and you go like that. And like the other thing.
Like here.
Yeah,
yeah, here,
exactly.
There.
I did it once when I was really drunk on St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a lot more of it. That's the only part I know.
I'm happy you did the jig.
There you go.
Thank you.
I just ran out of hope if you want some water, so let me know.
Oh, sure. Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm happy. It's chapter 39 of U2 at the End of the World by Bill Flanagan. You know, just because I have to hang on Bono's coattail through every gin mill, juke joint, pool hall, and pub in Dublin, doesn't mean I have to drag you along with me. Let's skip ahead 24 hours to Thursday of the week of the Dublin concerts. You haven't missed anything. Bono's still coming up with excuses not to go home. He's still in the same clothes he had on when he got off stage in Cork on Tuesday. We're both still awake and engaged in one of the greatest talking, walking pocketons since Johnson jabbered to Boswell. Do you know the story of how Edge lost the secret of the universe, Bono asks?
You gotta break into Irish here, Jared.
I can't do Bono.
You can do Irish, though.
Oh boy, Hibernian folktale. No, Bono, tell me. It started when Edge got a jar of psychedelic mushrooms. Bono begins as wise as Uncle Remus. The legend, in summary, goes like this. Being very scientific,
Bono decided that if he was going to sample any psychedelic mushrooms at all, he might as well eat the whole jar. Apparently, those were potent fungi.
Potent fungi.
And his eyes spun around, and his hat flew off his head. He figured he'd better not take a chance on any impressionable members of the YouTube fan club seeing him like this, so he went upstairs and got into his bed. He lay there for a while, and then imagined he heard his wife calling him. He went to the door. No one was there. He went back to bed. And then, amid kaleidoscopes of spinning dimensions, like an old Doctor Strange comic, Ed was giving the secret of the universe. Wow, he thought. The secret of the universe. I'm no fool. I better get this down on tape. So Ed reckoned that he was not the first traveler on the astral plane to grok the SOTU, but that others might in their altered state just assume they would remember it. That's where they goofed. Ed would take no chance. He swam over his shoulder bag and found his Walkman. He turned it on and began laughing hysterically at the red light. Finally, the scientist within got control. He regained his composure and spoke the secret of the universe into the recorder. His duty done, he put down the Walkman and exited Earth altogether. Upon returning the next day, Ed got out of bed, went down to the kitchen for something to eat, and when he opened the refrigerator, more than one light went on. Hey, Ed said, I learned the secret of the universe and I got it down on tape. He ran upstairs and found his tape recorder, played it back, and heard himself saying, vroom vroom, rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr badly recorded gibberish too, as he seemed to have been holding the Walkman upside down when he taped it.
Is that it?
Yeah!
To the secret of the universe.
And whatever it may be.
Edge's brief encounter with it.
Nothing twice. One of her earlier poems. Nothing can ever happen twice. In consequence, the sorry fact is that we arrive here improvised and leave without the chance to practice. Even if there is no one dumber, if you're the planet's biggest dunce, if you can't repeat the class in summer, this course is only offered once. No day copies yesterday. No two nights will teach what bliss is in precisely the same way, with exactly the same kisses. One day, perhaps some idle tongue mentions your name by accident. I feel as if a rose were flung into the room, all hue and scent. The next day, though you're here with me, I can't help looking at the clock. A rose? A rose? What could that be? Is it a flower or a rock? Why do we treat the fleeting day with so much needless fear and sorrow? It's in its nature's not to stay. Today is always gone, tomorrow. With smiles and kisses, we prefer to seek a chord beneath our star. Although we're different, we concur, just as two drops of water are.
Yeah.